Okay. Can't turn it off because of how this thing runs now. But plug it in so it doesn't make problems. Hi. Okay. I thought about this before, but I'm back to thinking about it again. That so many people spend so much time arguing about Christ and you know, everybody wants not to make Christians adversaries, and you go, well, says, can I tell you? I says, you're supposed to be deal killers. Christians use these terms because they're supposed to be deal killers, conversation killers, and the whole just kind of slam dunk, I just won thing. And they almost will keep it in reserve if they want to have a longer conversation, of course, to say, you know, hey, you just got a different Jesus Christ, therefore I win. And you go, oh yeah? You think you've got it because you're with the big majority? This is, how many times is the big majority the right group to be a part of? How many times is that true? If you're a Protestant, you went against prevailing forces that told you this is how it works. And you bucked the system, didn't you? You questioned. You looked for yourself instead of just accepting what was handed to you. You know, whether it was early Christianity or Catholicism or whatever else. And now it's like, oh no, I'm going to defend the majority view. I'm going to defend the majority view because that. And you go, why? Why exactly are you defending the majority view? Since when has your political or sociological or religious mindset ever gone, I'll just follow the crowd? Because that's what you're doing. You're saying, oh, he can't be right because, you know, you are apart. You are different. That is not, you know, swimming against the stream. Being orthodox, I am rarely orthodox. I am either unorthodox or I am quiet and detached. I spend a lot of time quiet and detached because I don't want to get beat up too often. You just get tired. Interesting at church today. There was a comment made by my wife, by golly. just to tell you that your spouse isn't necessarily your greatest cheerleader. And she said that it was hard to get me to shut up. And it's like, well, okay. So something was said, and there was a pause in the discussion, and everybody looked at me, and I said, why are you guys looking at me? I don't have anything to say. You're fine. Go on. I'm always supposed to give people issues. And you go, no, I find this really quite interesting. Got on to me today later on after church that I shouldn't let my children talk about me the way I do, because I had said, you know what, I don't think my kids like me very much. And then she said, well, you shouldn't let them get away with talking to you the way they do. And I was like, and I've been thinking about it. And I said, you know what? I said, how do those things have anything in common? Wouldn't a child's anger, hatred, or inconsiderateness, ingratitude? And I wasn't looking at it as ingratitude. Caleb brought up the fact that he would much rather live in a situation where he had good air conditioning and a working toilet. And I was like, oh. He doesn't realize how much those things cost. He really doesn't have a clue. Including all the garbage we'd have to go through to fix everything so that it worked properly at that house. And then as soon as I got done making all those changes, pouring all that money into it, the actual owner would show up and say, thank you very much, get out. And it's like, don't put your treasures here on earth. I said, you guys can come over and use the toilet and showering facilities over here. If it gets too dang freaking hot, come on over and be in the coolness with us. And I told all my children, I said, the 1927 rule is not a hammock. I don't expect you guys. I'm not putting together a circumstance that's going to be wonderful for you. Lisa very much was hoping that the people that are buying our old house, you know, the big 2,800 square foot house that we had in Tucumcari, she's always kind of been, well, you know, it'd be really great if I could have that back. I said, maybe it's not, Lisa. They actually did make a lot of changes to it. They have taken some pictures inside the house. They didn't intend to show off the house. They were showing off their kids and stuff like that. But they had put up some more walls. They had made it a lot more traditional than the way that we had had it. I had more stripped things out than added things. Regardless, and I have always kind of poo-pooed it, and I don't know if I really brought up the fact that I said, Lisa, I said, if we got that house back, a reasonably large number, we have six children, a reasonably large number of those six children would come back and live with us and live a Tucumcari lifestyle, which I don't want them to do. The only way to do that without just being an absolute jerk, which I'm perfectly willing to be a jerk. I know people tell me, don't say that. You go, no, I am. I'm not being a nice guy. But I have no intention of being a nice guy. I'm doing what my children need. Every once in a while, my children will tell me, Dad, thank you for doing this the way you did it, because now I'm going to have to go out and do more than I probably would have done otherwise. Boy, that doesn't happen very often. But it does, and I'm grateful for it. Because, it makes me say, okay, good, I'm not an asshole for no reason. It's accomplishing something. I'm sure if God were here on earth, his children would get angry with him because things didn't go as well as they should, or to their liking, or as easily as they would like it to do. God gave us this wonderful world. And it works. And there's where things kind of stand. Is it magnificent? You go, I said, can I be honest? I said, some parts are too humid. I don't like them. Other parts are too hot. I don't like those very much. There's no perfect places. There's seasons, so some parts of the world feel better than others at different times. I always felt like you should probably be somewhat nomadic just for the whole point of you want to be someplace cool when it's hot, and you want to be someplace warm when it's cold. There's something to be said for being a bit nomadic. I can't do that. Lisa won't tolerate this. So it's like, well, I guess we'll need to have two palaces. The winter palace and the summer palace. These were common among nobles in the day. And people, if you've listened to my recordings at all, you'll know that I don't have a problem with nobility. Barring that, moving around a bit. But given all that, my dear wife, I don't think would go for it. She likes being sit and set and doing what she wishes. And And she's entitled to do that. That's what women are entitled to do. Like I've always said, I said, I don't know what the rules are for women. I really don't. I think in almost every legal system in the whole world, there is distinct differences in how men are incarcerated and how women are incarcerated. Women can get away with a lot more than men can. Men are ordered to sacrifice. Women, by and large, are not. I think the act of being a wife and a mother is sufficient sacrifice for God. I don't think He demands much more of women. Now, they get put through. It's just the sacrifice of living. I think that is the big trade-off between men and women, is that women women, I'm sorry, I had to take a look and make sure the thing was going, and it is, so I'm okay. Women's self-sacrifice is built in. In fact, it's almost chemical. They will do these things. Men, not so much so. So they have to be instructed. On the arts of better living. Women almost come with better living kind of burned into their genes. Chromosomes. God, I've always got to be careful about what to say these days. Oh my gosh. So, this is your wife's comfort is quite important. Men are to sacrifice so that their wives might be comfortable, especially during the childbearing and child-rearing years. Now, my wife is past both, but she still gets to basically say where we live and where we don't live. Remember our first house in Tucumcari that we were buying? She actually had two choices. And I chose. I don't know if she's upset at me for what I chose. Once she settles in and she gets in there, she gets comfortable and she's okay. It's interesting. But I can't bump her around too much, as which I did. Us going to Portales, then to Albuquerque, then to Oklahoma City, then back to Portales-ish. And then to Tucumcari, back to Tucumcari to live in my mom's old house, I put her through plenty. And she endured it pretty well. Although I tend to do the bulk of the moves. I'm not saying she doesn't contribute to it massively, you know. The actual garbage of moving, I tend to do the garbage of moving. That's okay. You know. And I'm tired. I don't want to have to put up with moving anymore either. So, it works. And I don't do these recordings just to upset Lisa. week coming up. Oh, I guess I should try to finish off a little bit of what I was saying about a different Jesus Christ, and we're not the same. We don't talk about the same person at all. And you go, that's fine. That does not bother me. It says, but that does bring up an interesting fact. It says, you're on the hot seat. I know what you believe about Jesus Christ. You can say, well, you need to choose which Jesus Christ you want to follow. And I'm going, oh, contra mon frère, I think the problem comes from your standpoint. Introduced to this new Jesus Christ, you need to make sure that I'm not following the correct Jesus Christ, and you are rejecting whole swaths of Christishness. It says, so you guys need to figure that out. It says, it's not for me to do. I'm perfectly willing to say that it's a different Christ, but then that, it says, I don't know if it's new to put you in that quandary, but that's the quandary you're in. You'll have to better investigate my Jesus Christ to ascertain that it is not the right Jesus Christ. And there is some literature that says that when people are trying to stay away from Jesus Christ and read through the Book of Mormon and take the test at the end, which is you pray about it to find out if it's true or not. You're taking an awful risk that what you've been taught all these years is a different Jesus Christ by your own admission. By your own admission, you said it was a different Jesus Christ. You might feel the Spirit compelling you to accept a different Jesus Christ than you grew up with. And my thing is, if you figure out that that's true, what will you do with that little fact? What will you do with it? Will you be a person of honor? Or will you cast aside the only thing that should be able to change your heart? Don't throw your Bible at me and tell me to throw away everything that I have received spiritual confirmation of its truthfulness and tell me that I would be on the right course. Tell me, this is all these wonderful preachers that say, I felt called. I felt like God was calling me on this thing. And you go, and how did you get that feeling? How did you get that confirmation? How did that come? If you felt that kind of feeling after reading the Book of Mormon, and asking God, is this your word? Is this your word, Father? What would you do? Knowing that you would probably be throwing away your career. You'd have to find something else. You'd have to sell insurance or something. I don't know what preachers do after they decide that they can't do stuff. Construction? I don't know. What would you be willing to do? you were willing to follow the very, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude, lucrative, potentially very lucrative field of ministry, quote ministry, in order to follow Christ. Would you go back to your old church and tell them that you had read the Book of Mormon and you found out that the Book of Mormon was true, therefore Joseph Smith was a prophet? Oh, I guess that would go pretty badly. But you know what? What kind of a person are you? What kind of a person are you? But, you know, I say that I want you to be true to what you learn. And I know that's going to be difficult. Especially if you took great pains among those you talk to, bad-mouthing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Might be rough. Might be rough. But you know what? It happens. Now, I'm not saying you have to go back and preach your new knowledge to those who you damaged. That's rough. There was some characters in the Book of Mormon that did that. And can I be honest? They went off and went among the Nephite, the Lamanites instead. It's tough to stay in your own country. Christ said it. It's true. I don't think Paul had tons of success among the people, among the Jews that he had been, you know, he had been a zealous Christian killer or a person that was going out hunting down Christians, bringing them to justice. I don't think it would have been useful for him to spend much time in Jerusalem and stuff like that, preaching the gospel particularly. So he went out among the Gentiles. Much more useful. They didn't know his interesting background. Until he told it to them. The son of Alma and the four sons of Mosiah, there might have been more than four, but these four were buddies with Alma, and they were destroying the church. And they had a turnaround. And they brought many Lamanite souls back to Christ. We have no idea if they brought back a handful or any of the Nephites that they had convinced away from the faith. It's just not in there. Anyway, so that's sort of where that stands. Our branch got made into a ward this Sunday, and they called and set apart our old branch president is the new bishop. Many people said that was the way it was going to go. They were right. But it didn't have to go that way. way it went. And it was all very good. Afterwards, poor Lisa struggles with the potlucks these days. They aren't going the way she was accustomed for them to go. And she struggles sometimes with these things. And I understand that. That's Lisa. That's Lisa. What am I talking about? Oh, apparently this coming week, probably going to be having interviews. Now, I didn't have a chance. I was supposed to have a call from the recruiter at 3 o'clock. For all I know, she'll come back. She goes, "You were supposed to call me." I was going, "Well, I'm sorry, I got the impression you were going to call me." He says, "You know, it's not, I've got plenty of things to do." I was having this last few weeks to kind of give me some kind of an insight into what I needed to, you know, how I needed to conduct myself for other kinds of jobs. The circumstance I've carved out for myself in Albuquerque is rough. Now, I could change it. I could change it and make it 5 days a week and make it not so onerous, but you know, that would actually be a real, you know, it would be more expensive on several levels. It would buy me more time. Not to be on the road so much. Lisa kind of likes the Pantex thing, but I don't think Pantex is really going to trip over itself trying to get me. But if the interview comes up, happy day, you know. Will I go for the interview? I also know that the last time I did an interview for Sandia, I pretty much got worked over. I mean, worked over. And I wasn't the person they ultimately chose. I wasn't the person they wanted. And it's like, okay. There was this one guy, I just did not comprehend what on earth he was asking for. And you're going, okay, and says, "Well, I did badly." And you go, "You tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. Gracious. What do you want me to say?" And that was, yeah. And boy, let me tell you, he was like, it's like, I'm not gonna do it. But I didn't get offered it, and that's okay. That's fine. If you got 30 things on your plate to do, how are you going to track that? And you go, just work it? Says I. What? And you go, there's tracking systems. I use the existing tracking systems that we have. And that didn't seem to please him. And it's like, eh, well, anyway. So, you know, I'm not surprised the Pantex people come back, you know, and they go, well, we want to see your proper modeling of this according to, you know, I just finished up the certification for the ITIL 4 foundation, and I am, it's kind of soured me a bit, you know. I'm right here at the tail end of whatever this is, career, my profession, whatever. And I'm terribly interested in prolonging it any longer than I have to. At least not at that kind of level. I don't like being particularly mechanized. I'm not really into that stuff. I know that's certainly where the industry is going. And to be really honest, not terribly interested in that kind of a thing. To be honest, really. This week, the ones with New Mexico State at Sunspot, I have a, you know, I really hope that it's good. It's going to really add to the pension from the state. That is really far more lucrative than any other retirement I could have. Now, I've already got it. I'm already vested. I'm going to get it. It's just a question of when and how much. And if I can boost it, that's something to work for. And the fact that it would be I think it would be an interesting change. I have now really doesn't interest me much. I mean, the pay's good. That much I can certainly say. I'm not saying that Mexico State will have any ability to make that go any better. I do not get this guy next to me. It is, he was actually bucking for position, and it's not going to happen. I'm in the left lane. You know, I'm in the passing lane. It's going to be passed. What the heck? Don't you come over here. What kind of crap is this? Okay. I guess I understand on some level. All right. There we go. Gee whiz. I'm sorry. At least it gets like this, too. Alright. If I get the sunspot job, I'll be driving further to get there, but I won't have any commute at all because I'll actually hopefully be living there. If they come back and tell me, no, you'll have to live someplace else and drive up there every day. It's like, no, how much are you going to pay me? How much are you going to compensate me for doing that, for that little requirement, when there's living space right there? You know, I intend to have, you know, I intend the trade-off to be that you guys provide me a living space and I live there and you guys don't have to pay me as much because the only expense that I'll have is food. You know, I won't have to worry about other things. And hopefully give me the opportunity to, you know, it says, I still plan on working on that doctor of ministry. Of engaged wisdom. To preach family sovereignty. And my greatest hope is that in these classes that I'll be taking, I will be getting the kind of instruction I need to establish that kind of circumstance. I was thinking back to, and I think one of my last, boy, let me tell you, the last recording I did in the blister was, I was really kind of in a low place, and whoa, you could tell, I was quite bummed out. I don't know if I got any better after it, but I went to sleep, and I'm very much there are conferences around this stuff, and that's really what you want to see. I've been to some conferences. There was this wonderful fella named Joel Belknap. I found out that he was a Latter-day Saint up with Utah Valley University there in Provo. And he's a technology manager, sort of, special projects. And he does kind of professional development there at those conferences. He goes to the Coherence? I think it's Coherence, and it's by and large schools. It caters to schools that want something a little more independent. They're all banner schools. They all use Aleutian Banner, but they also but it's not just run by Aleutian. You know, it's run by a consortium of these schools. So, I don't know if you call it more independent, but it's not. You can you can talk more freely about the problems that you're having. And if you're considering another course, or if you're considering something kind of off the beaten path, that's the kind of forum where you can bring it up. And I was looking at what Joe was up there doing, and I've done some presentations at conferences, not quite that level, but I've done some, and I found it really quite stimulating. I kind of liked it. And you have to understand that in about 2004, I read, what was that book? It was Scott Adams. I like Scott Adams. He got himself into real hot water. And now he's kind of persona non grata. I don't think he'll ever recover what he once had. I hope he enjoyed the money that he amassed off of the Dilbert cartoon. And I'm trying to remember which Dilbert book it was. It was a long time ago. It was, you know, it was in the late 1999 to the early 2000s. I actually got the book from Compaq, the computer company Compaq, before it joined up with HP, if you want to try to date it, for free. And I just, I don't remember it, but he talked about affirmations in there. And that his key to success, his key to the fact that he had pulled together this you know, his lifestyle and being able to do comics. He always wanted to do it. And he said, I accomplished it through affirmations. And to be honest, I say that affirmations are very much, just another word for prayer. And that on some level, God treats these things as prayer, and that he was getting help. Now, he is an avowed atheist, which I think God giggles at and says, well, that's just silly, but okay, whatever. And then, you know, I said, even to an atheist, I think God will grant the blessings that come from obedience. It doesn't have to be, you know, well, God did this for me, and I prayed, and I got it. And I've prayed for a few things. And we'll see what ultimately happens, you know. I did affirmations on being a writer, lecturer, and speaker. I certainly write plenty, so I don't think that's a big thing. The lecture and speaker, I've done a little bit of it, but I think I'm still due a little bit more. Oops, which way are you gonna go? Whatever you're gonna do, do it. I stay right behind that guy. Well, that makes you happy. Okay. Let me get some gas real fast. I'll be right back. Oh, I hope it didn't stop recording. Oh, it did. What are you gonna do? Oh, that doesn't work. Oh. Not a bad price here. Is that me? Oh.
$350.
That's a good price. That's why I do it here in Santa Rosa. Prices have been vastly and wildly. Okay. I don't want a receipt here, and then we'll be gone. I'll go. This as well. Oops. Okay. Back in the car again. All right. Anyway, so. Oops. Struggling. All right, let's get on back on our way. Oops. There we go. Oh, that'll do better. Still recording. Good. Okay. So anyway, I did that affirmation, and I'm not saying I haven't accomplished it yet, but it didn't do anything like that. I also pray once upon a time for $2 million. And, you know, it really becomes a question of how would you acquire this? And, I don't know if that really matters much to me these days. Go ahead and feel that out and know that with this doctor of ministry, I was going to go out and evangelize a family. You know, the whole thing of, I think I might have put another recording, but I'll do it again. To evangelize something is to do it a lot. So it would be you know, get married, have babies, and become gods. I don't mean to, you know, this is a progression. Do one, then do the next, and then proceed on to the next level, which is to become like God. What God does is he continues to have children, to raise them, to have the things that he has. We are in the middle of the process right here. says, and let me tell you, says, it gives life a whole lot more authentic purpose than anything else. And it doesn't matter to me under what auspice I do it. It says, I am an Aaronite priest. If the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints declares me an apostate for some reason, I don't know why they would, but if they chose to, I'm not saying they wouldn't. It's always a possibility, I suppose. I would still do it under the title of being an Aaronite priest, which nobody can take away from me. Nobody can strip from me. I'm not saying the church would even want to. But, you know, there is a little spit of a parable. I don't even know if it's really a parable, but the whole idea of going and building a tower, and that you should count the cost before you do it to make sure it can be completed. I have this thought that, especially at the beginning of the church, when thousands were being baptized in the church, entire congregations were being converted to the gospel of Jesus Christ, restored through Joseph Smith. Now, I'm perfectly willing to say that these people had been prepared and were striving to get to such a thing when they uncovered it, when they discovered it. I also say that it was probably simpler for them because they were already living in such a way and had the same basic attitudes as other people do. In bringing people to Christ, an effective way of doing this is to make sure that they are living a godly life, whether they really fully embrace godliness. I was preaching about this, or I was talking about it. I don't know how good that went. From the standpoint of I was at the training and technical assistance program, and we would do trainings. Now, my family culture trainings didn't go very well. Only a few people came to my particular training, but it was certainly one of the early forays into doing this. If you're saying, well, how long have you been talking about this stuff? You go, well, to be honest, I've really been doing it since, God, you know, see, that's tricky. I came up with, well, it was called Family Initiative first, and I use that as my as kind of a doing business as name, a DBA, and uh, doing that, probably. And I was probably doing that when I was still on the boat. So it could have been 1998, 1997. So I've been doing this for quite a while in a very embryonic form. My interest in it did not predate the family proclamation, but I don't think I really had much of a thing about the family proclamation when I was doing this stuff. Anyway, but I had been struggling with this stuff since when I went to school. So it was the very early 90s. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in 1993. I got my associates and started trying to do daycare centers in 1990. And that was where I was trying to pull together some of these ideas. I did not like the idea of government-run child care centers. I much prefer family daycare homes. And so I tended to... My sensibilities tended to go along those lines. And almost everything around child development, early childhood education, those two different fields, and they're different, really has a bad element of government control and dictatorialness. New Mexico had very just kind of public health sort of rules around child development. They were, I think, kind of taken from institutional care centers, which were just mostly about being safe, not really dictating what your programming would be. And there were many elements in the state trying to force through what they wanted to see in the way of programs. And I was finding myself less and less interested in what they were trying to accomplish. It didn't help that I became a training coordinator at a child care center for the Air Force, there at Kennan Air Force Base, and, you know. And they were actually pretty decent. It was mostly structured toward you getting your CDA and stuff like that. It worked along those lines. But they were really starting to get into programming. And the state tried to change its regulations to push a certain programmatic style. You know, this is what you're going to do. It's going to be based on this and this. You're going to do stations. You're going to run it this way and this way and this way. They came up with a training program, which I used to teach, that was supposed to handle this. It's a whole thing on the anti-bias curriculum, which was very much, at first it was just about, okay, we don't want to push Christmas down people's faces, so we'll turn it into a winter holiday or something. People who had an attitude about Halloween, you'd call that your fall festival. You'd still do the same things, you just give it a name that didn't have some weird quasi-paganish Catholic connotation to it. Anyway, so it was more like that, but then, you know, there was some that were saying, oh, this is the time that we really need to push the anti thing. And I've written slightly about anti, and you have to be really quite careful of it. Anyway, so I see this extremely long-term progression to where I'm kind of headed, and I like it. You know, when people say, well, you should stay in technology, the money's good, and you're going, but my heart's not in that. I says, I've really... And it's not, it doesn't even approach the bulk of my experience. I did computers for money. I don't do it out of love. I would really rather not get into that too much. One of my biggest problems, I'm way too nostalgic. Although that's probably going to be one thing that really helps me at Sunspot, and they'll probably say, well, we've only got a grant for a few more years, maybe three, and then we'll probably have to mothball the whole thing. And you go, that's fine, because I've only got about that much time left until I retire, so you don't have to worry about me. He says, I'm fine. He says, after I'm done with this job, if this job evaporates out from under me, or if I finally say, okay, I'm done, you know, I'm probably not going to be doing this kind of work again. I will let computers go back to being just kind of a fun hobby to keep me happy and to run some websites that I like to do. Mostly to make it so that it's really easy for me wherever I am to write, because I do a lot of writing. I write all the time, and I do research, and I collect information, and then I write on what I collect. And I don't collect anything about computers, you know. And they said, well, you should get your master's in like data science or something, or get a PhD in data science or something like that. And you go, no, why? Why would I choose to do that? This is, I don't research that. I don't study that. I'm not interested in that. Anyway, so I found that most of the time in a lot of the things that I have done in relation to child development, I find myself kind of souring to things. And then I said, so how do I want to do it? Do I just want to be this researcher and give, you know, and do presentations based on my research to other academics? And I go, no. And then I said, well, what's the other option? There's usually other options. Now, you can go ahead and get your PhD and not go to the academy. But that's not usually the way. I don't want to teach at a college and have a small number of people, students, to influence somehow. Now, you can do that with a doctor of ministry, too, although it's not very common at all. But the doctor of ministry seems so much more poignant. Because, well, let me give you a whole other thing about me. I really felt like I did pretty well as a missionary. And it helped because people knew what I was going to be doing. That helped me a lot in being a successful missionary. They could see me coming. And there was no trickery to it. I really like that. I feel like that with a doctor of ministry, and I'll say exactly what I'm going to be preaching about. You know, am I going to be preaching Latter-day Saint doctrine particularly? No. Now, it'll be included because I don't have to, you know, I'm not pigeonholed into what I'm allowed to talk about. You know, they said, well, he's going to be talking about God. And you go, oh, yes. Most definitely. There's several ways you can approach the whole idea of becoming gods. Most elitists have the attitude about becoming like God, and they figured out ways to try to make it happen. And they're actually, and it actually makes some sense. It's not crazy. You can say, boy, that guy is crazy. And you're going, no, he's working toward godhood. Now, he may be going about it the wrong way, but he's doing a fair to middling job of trying to make it happen. But that's just by the same token, when you flip it over and you go, well, Latter-day Saints know how have the idea that we're going to become like God. And you're going, well, just because you have that information doesn't mean it's going to happen to you. Nobody says how you actually become like God. Almost all the information is how do you get into the circumstance to qualify for becoming like God. Not the actual act of becoming like God itself. There are some people who have worked out how they can become more like God. And it's quite elitist. And there's going to be a lot of people that just have a problem with that. Well, I don't believe in God. It's going around or whatever. Yeah, it's not good. It got to be. No, God's not the elitist ever. No. And it's like, okay, it says you can do that. It says you'll qualify, and I guess you'll have to work through your classist hang-ups later on. Can you be a good person and be an elitist? Yes, I think. So, a lot of my preaching will be to, I'm sorry, I'm going to be honest. I said, I want to talk to, and I want to preach to, the elites. If that means that I need to get an invitation to go to the Bilderberg group, this said, no, I'm not going to, you know, they'll come in saying this guy's a preacher. To accept me, they'll have to know that I'm coming and know who I am. I don't know if I have to come in there and say, you know, I tried to put as much protection around myself as I can, so something bad doesn't happen to me. He says, but I'm not just preaching that you need to behave like this. The vast majority of elitists get married, have children, often lots of children, and are they working to become gods? They are. It says, so I'm not so much preaching to you as I'm encouraging you to set up the structures. Use your power. Use your elitism and the abilities that are unique to you to put structures in place so that more people and that people are encouraged to marry and to have children and raise them with their own culture. Raise them with your own culture. Right now, the only people who are really having kids are the very rich and the very poor. Most productive and your steadiest workers, they're married, they have children, they have obligations, they can't just walk. Those are the people who are gonna going to give you the best back. And that's just the way it kind of goes. Just let them become narcissistic. Unmarried, unchild, listless bums. It says they're not enriching you. You're the kings. You need knights. And you don't need those kind of knights. I can tell them too. He said, I can help you become a god. He said, I can't do it, but I know how it can be done. And it really is through Jesus Christ. Is being obedient, teaching your children to be obedient. Seeking the blessings of the temple. And not the one with the owl and stuff like that. I'll tell you where to go. We're all over the earth. God can make this happen for you. And it's possible. You can be like He is. You can be a God. You can command billions. Don't have to drain children of their precious fluids. You don't have to buy it through the sex trade. Spouses can have it. And not some weird kind of twisted half, I feel like a god, I feel like, you know. I mean the real deal. Own entire planets. Like that. And more. But it can only be had through Elohim. Anyway, you know, so there's different ways that you speak to different sorts of people to make this attractive to them. It's not a zero-sum game. And the blessings that flow to you from getting others to do this as well, helping others do this, if you want to project it that way, accrue to you. That's the most powerful thing. It isn't just becoming a god yourself. It's helping others to become gods as well. That is what God... That's God's work. I'm sorry, it's right here in Scripture. God's work in His glory is to bring to pass the immortality, eternal life of man. That's what it is. He does it for you. You do it for others. They do it, and it just becomes this huge greatness. A God of God of gods. Gods upon gods. Generation upon generation. You understand this. It's like you amassing such wealth that you can pass it on to your successors, your children, and they will become like you. They will become gods. And it progresses. Now, are there going to be a lot of duds? Yes, that's why we have large families. Some of our children will disappoint. Some of our children will turn away from us. Some of them will die in childbirth. Some will Some will die in accidents. Now, that doesn't matter in the eternal scheme of things, but the other ones do. I just sit there and I'm flummoxed by people who had wonderful children and they died and they weep and they whine and they groan and they go on and on. And I don't see why. Because death is just brings on the next stage of life. That's all death is. Whether it comes quickly or if we linger and it goes on forever, much like I get hit by a truck, something. But you want to be doing something noble, I swear. So try to be doing noble things all the time. So when the moment arrives, and something takes you out, I would just assume it was some fast-working disease, some horrible parasite, while I'm off in Africa trying to accomplish some great deed. I really prefer that over something else. It seems to me, as I think about it, I've been building and building and building and building and building and building toward something of this sort. And like I said, I really appreciate the name tag because people knew what I was about before I showed up. And I wasn't going to get particularly worked over because people knew what I was coming for and what I was coming with. And my particular spin on it, I guess, is a good way to say it. You know, if you're a computer tech and you go to a computer tech conference and you give your credentials in technology, people expect you to talk about technology. And if you start going on about God, which has always been tricky because I've always made it quite plain that when something happened, they went, how did you do that? Or, you know, wow, that was really amazing. And I just point up and I go, it was that. And that's really disconcerting because that's not the way it's supposed to go. You know, you're supposed to accomplish these things through the proper process. You know, if there's some better process, you're supposed to bring it up. I'm not an orthodox figure, so I don't tend to do technology in an orthodox way, which is upsetting to a lot of people. Um, when I became a chief information officer, the first thing I was normally given was, you know, I was in charge of making sure that we became professional in an orthodox way. And that was kind of not, it wasn't working for me because I'm not orthodox. I'm just not. Never have been in technology. Made very, very obvious over the years. I've had bosses that were very upset with me because they said, you're not doing these things in an organized and orthodox way that pleases us. And so it really becomes, I don't want to, you know, I'm really very much, I tell you, when it comes down to it, I'm very, and, well, okay. I did this ITIL 4 foundation training, and it is definitely hardline orthodox training. It tells you exactly the process that you need to take, the things that you need to make, and how it needs to be structured and done. Is it a little flexible? I'm not saying it's inflexible. I'm just saying that, yeah, if you have any other ideas, you better not talk about it. You better disabuse them. And I'm usually not shy about telling people I'm a bit of a gunslinger. And I make things happen. Some people don't mind that because they don't care and they don't understand. In larger IT environments, Sandia is a very large one. I don't know how I got hired here. I really don't. I feel very blessed, but it's going to come back to haunt me. And of course, I'm treated like a 35 or 40-year-old person, midstream in my thing, and I'm really kind of at the end. You're not supposed to be bouncing around at this point. You're supposed to have settled into a nice circumstance and, you know, and be nice and stable. And I'm not. Anyway, so I'm really quite the whole thing. I just want a place where I can work out the last few years of my pension. The fact that they said she'll be touching a lot of these different computers works okay for me. I have no intention of being a rule maker. I'm gonna make these things happen. I'm not gonna be weird about the data because I don't think the data's really all that you know, it's not like a lot of people's names and numbers. It's instrumentation and telemetry data about the sun, and it's for a university. Their basic mode is to share these things. The person I'm talking to is very much into solar art and expression that way. And I think I was really talking her language because I was saying, you know, I think it would be really cool to do a podcast. And And one of its big things is mostly to keep the solar observatory running. You know, it's another potential funding stream. And to do things like that, to put people of a mind to think about these things. The actual grant I think that's being worked off of is kind of a minority STEM grant. You know, it's about getting women interested or other ethnic groups interested in astronomy. And, you know, we're really pushing for, that's great. It says now it only has to work for a few years for me. It says you don't have to worry about, you know, if it's going to be time to move on to another observatory for somebody and they're taking the money with them. And it's like, well, we're going to shut this place down and I would be really tied to that equipment on a certain level. And you go, and you don't want to leave somebody in the lurch like that. And you go, I've been around this thing a long time. I've played with all of these kinds of computers. And my first technology job, which was on a boat, was mostly telemetry. Bringing in data, storing it, processing it, spitting out products. And that's something you'd really like to do. Now, if I'm going to be up against somebody who's actually like, yeah, I did my degree in astronomy, but I really got into the technology, you go, I can't compete with that person. Because they know about the interesting data that's going to be collected and how to use it. But we'll see. We'll see. They've had a tough time filling that position. Of course, half of it, I think, is saying, well, you're going to be up in the thing and you're going to be in a pretty lonely spot. And you go, that works great for me. Doesn't bother me on any level whatsoever. I said, I've got a whole nother racket I'm working on. It has nothing to do with any of this. And I'm trying to get my PhD, which people in university, they comprehend that. Now, they may go, I don't comprehend you getting a doctorate in ministry. That seems, you know, for them, that seems goofy. And you go, it's okay. I'm a goofy guy. I'm not here to impress you at all. I'm just here to do this wonderful job, and I can do it. And, you know, and I want you to pay me for it. I don't want to be eating bark. I've got a wife to support. I don't have kids to support anymore, which is the wonderful thing. My kids really are trying to figure out what to do next, and. And I need to not get too weird about that. Let them go on and do what they need to do. And to accomplish what they want to accomplish, that's the most important thing. It isn't to hang around your parents. That's another thing about godhood. Godhood is not hanging around your parents. That's not what it's about. And I get it's somewhat obnoxious when people say, oh, we just want to go back to our heavenly home. And you're going, no, you've left home. That's what coming to earth is, leaving home. And guess what? I mean, you're going on to another level. You are not going back to go and crash in a hammock in Heavenly Father's backyard. Don't do that. Don't think along those lines. I hope you don't teach your kids that. I worry with some of the kind of attitudes that we give to little kids, and they hang on to that forever. The whole idea of unconditional love was really hatched out of primary. Says, and that bothers me. We need to get these people past their basic gospel understanding is being basically primary songs. And how many of you are basically primary songs? And that's your testimony. God loves me, and he's going to let me come back and live with him. And you're going, do you? I said, the sad part is how many people are excited when you say, do you want that to happen to your kids? And they go, oh yeah, I want my kid to come back and live with me, and it's going to be so wonderful, and we'll all live together in peace and happiness, and I'll do all the laundry, and I'll take care of it. It's like, that is, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that. That's not progression. That's regression. God doesn't tolerate it. God doesn't tolerate it. You're going to go somewhere. You are not coming back to the pre-existent life where you got to hang with Heavenly Father and Mother all the time. And I don't think that's even going to be much of the relationship if you make it and you qualify for exaltation. The Goldman Sachs Junior Executive Program. It ain't going to happen. That's what you're going to be getting into, is the Junior Executive Program. You're not going back home. It's not going to be the way it was. You're not going back to the Garden of Eden. That's what the terrestrial people are probably going to feel the most like, is it's like, we're just trying to get back to the Garden of Eden. You know, Adam and Eve screwed it up for us, and Christ made it possible so that we can go back to the Garden of Eden. And you're going, guys, that is not the goal. That is not the goal at all. The Garden of Eden was probably terrestrial. It says that we'll be being able to experience something akin to that in the millennium. But no, that's not what you should be going for. That's terrestrial. This is telestial. You want to stay with a nicer version of this? But it's going to have all the problems that you're accustomed to seeing here. You know? Because you're going to have the same clientele. You have to understand. So it has a lot to do with us. What kind of people we want to be. The people who are going to the terrestrial kingdom want to be able to eat fruit and cavort around naked all day and not notice it, you know, and say, it doesn't bother me, I don't care, I'm feeling free. So that's not, you know, so, and that becomes the preaching. It says, I'm working toward Godhead. You can go to the terrestrial kingdom as a single person that has no intention that women that hate men that hate women, blah, 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 stuff like that. It's a tricky place to go to, because if you've been fornicating, you ain't going to go there unless you repent and stop. And how many people have any kind of incentive to really stop until somebody just tells them, I don't want to have anything to do with you. The old raggedy, beat up, slimy body. It's all riddled with sexually transmitted diseases. So it's not interesting. You know, that doesn't earn your way to it. It's other things. Just so you know. Anyway, so... That's the thing. Writer, lecturer, speaker. And like John Taylor Gatto, he got interesting because he started talking about one of his big talks with the research that he did was to talk about the kind of education that you got at elite schools and how different it was from what was produced in public schools. Totally different animals. And now, I didn't say whether you should do it that way or not. But he liked to talk about it. Like I said, I don't really know why he did it the way he did it. I really don't. So I do. I see the natural progression forward. I know, Jason, you're not making any sense. And you go, well, I'm doing a dang recording off the cuff in a car. And I always do this. People go, how do we piece together what he's really after? And you go, you have to come to some of my actual presentations. Or you have to come and listen and take a look at what I'm writing. These recordings are just my working recordings. And you can probably ferret out where things are going because I'm just free thinking it here to see if I really come through on what I hope to do. And it really is. It says start getting speaking gigs. Speak often. Come up with opportunities to speak. That's why maybe I do these recordings, is because I go, I'm just practicing speaking. I get very frustrated as I start stuttering really badly. Poor Lisa has to take care of me. And you're going, you know, my biggest problem is I'm not ready. Or these aren't the kind of venues. I'm not a panel person particularly. I'm just not. A few times I've been on panels, I wasn't helpful to the panel. So it's like, eh. Well, anyway, I'm going to go out into that kind of realm. So that people know from what standpoint I'm going to talk. It's going to be preaching. It's going to be ministering. It's going to be trying to bring you to a place and trying to get you to act with religious zeal on these things. I don't know how it's going to look. I don't know what's going to happen. to a certain extent, I want to remain somewhat independent so that, you know, I don't have to censor myself in certain ways. You know, we expect you to speak from a Baptist standpoint all the time, and you're going, I'm not even Baptist. You go, well, we want to appear ecumenical, but we also want you to make sure and, you know, you will only draw from the Bible. And you go, that's too restrictive. That's too restrictive. I like using the Quran, too. And I love using the Book of Mormon and the Doctrine and Covenants. These are treasure troves. You guys just don't know what you're missing in casting these things aside. You're, you know, God, you're just passing up a treasure trove of additional wisdom from Christ. It's like, well, we don't do that. It's like, oh, yeah, I kind of get that impression that you're not so much into that. And I like the fact that I would be getting this from Ubiquity University. Number one, it doesn't cost very much. And number two, which always sings to me, I am cheap, 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 to the nth degree. But also that it isn't even particularly strung out on Christianity particularly. It's very much, you know, when you see the bumper sticker that says coexist, and the coexist word is spelled out in all these, some of them are religious symbols, and other ones are other symbols of different ideologies or belief systems. I think the Ubiquity University people are enamored of, would be very much pleased to see that bumper sticker on your car. Now, I'm not gonna, I don't do bumper stickers. I'm not a bumper sticker guy. But I know plenty of people are, so that's why my bumper sticker is get married, and and whispered, get married in the temple. Have babies in the covenant. Become gods through Jesus Christ. That makes some Christians okay. That makes Jews not totally horrendous. I think I may even offend a decent number of Latter-day Saints this way. Oh, we don't talk about that. Latter-day Saints, because of temples, feel like that a lot of information is secret and cannot be said. How dare you tell people about exaltation? Of course, it makes Christians just their eyes bleed for the kind of heresy that is to them. I don't care. It's my thing. This is what you can do. And people go, well, I really like everything you talk about. And I'm really excited by the fact that there's a God that says that we can become gods like they are. And you go, yeah, uh-huh. It's true. Such gods exist. And you go, and in fact, they are the gods of this world. And of our environs. Anyway, know, and you go, I'll tell you exactly where I'm going to point you to. The place is called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Look it up, www.churchofjesuschrist.org, and and start your journey. Start your journey. I hope the church goes crazy and goes, Nimrod, we are getting so tired of you talking about exaltation, getting people all hyped up about exaltation, and the church just struggles to try to deal with these new weird converts you're bringing us that really are enamored of a gospel that we don't often talk about because most of our people aren't there yet. You've got these guys hyped up on becoming like God. And you go, yeah, I did. Well, we're so busy trying to just get their kids to be interested in getting baptized. And you go, yeah, that's your problem, not mine. They're coming from these exotic places, and they're people with lots of money, and we don't get it. And you go, all I'm doing is preaching things in a manner that makes sense to these people, that these people understand. And I don't know what these poor missionaries have to do when they say, tell me about this becoming like God business. And they go, I didn't even know that we believed in that. And you're going, oh, they're really young. And the way they're instructed to bring you, you know, to teach you, it's not in there. I'm sorry. I throw them a complete curve. These poor guys have to figure out something. It says, but you'll have to try to work through the fact that it says, and yeah, going to church is going to be bizarre. It says, trust me, it is for me. A first year church. That's what this is. They're just trying to get people to get through the next 20, 30 years. Through the second coming of Jesus Christ. We're just trying to make sure that they don't, you know, burn holes in the upholstery when they get lit up like Christmas trees by God. We're just trying to get them to where they don't do that. And that they get baptized. They don't understand what they're getting into, but they do it anyway just because it's what you do, you know. And they struggle with the big picture, where you don't, because that's really all you've worried about was the big picture. And I gave you the big picture that really, you know, oh, wow, had this great feeling from it. You said, oh my gosh, we're not just playing games down here. We're not just trying to pay off scientists to try to figure out ways to extend our lives. We're not just doing that, or we're not doing that anymore, because now we've figured out that staying alive is not what we should be worried about. What we should be worried about is what comes after death. You guys keep putting off death like it's some horrible finalistic thing. It's not. You need to pull yourself together and get ready for the fact that you have to qualify for an executive program run by God Himself and herself. Them, the they that be, all you feminists. That would think about these things, hey, it's a couple. A couple makes God, not a single person. So that's why that said, I'm sorry. I'm being really straightforward. That's why I say get married. Get married and stay married. Don't walk away from it. Why? Because it's not going to be, it's not something you can have just for the wanting. You have to do. And this is one of the things you got to do. Have children. Have children, man. Have children. Don't curtail yourself. You're going to have money sufficient to do. Have children. Have a lot of children. The people back in the old, you know, Middle Eastern, and you'd say, well, I have 28 children. And, you know, they say, I buy five or six wives. And you go, yeah. He says, well, Latter-day Saints, you know, it wasn't compatible with Western sensibilities, so we don't do it anymore. We just don't do it, period. It's okay. Sometimes God says, do that. Other times he says, stop doing that. It's like, okay. Stop doing it. You go, well, isn't God the same today and forever? You go, yeah. He says, but what he tells you to do is going to change occasionally. Based on this and that, and that God is a priesthood office. It's a power. It is an honorarium to a certain extent. And so you need to become part of that priesthood. And it's administered through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's Christ's church on the earth. That's what it is. Where am I? Am I on the far side of it going for Mountaineer? I think I am. So, I'm close to Mountaineer here. 8:09. This is about right. It's still about an hour out from Bernardo. Anyway. So yeah, it seems a natural progression. And when people say, well, why'd you get your doctor of mystery? You don't have to have that to do this. And you go, well, it says it's like being a missionary and having the black name tag. It's like that. But, it says, can I be honest? And this may seem really rude. But I don't really want it to be under the auspice of the church, particularly. I always point people to the church. You want to know the religious concept and framework that this comes from? Go go to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, www.churchofjesuschrist.org, and they will lead you in the right direction. They'll help you get there. Now, they may be a little skittish about telling you about becoming like God, because that's what things we talk about to just people, and you go, it's okay, I do. Because I know where you people are headed. I know what you people want. Come on! There's a reason why you are the way you are. You want more. So this is what you're offered, more. So, but anyway, yeah. It's all about family sovereignty. You want your family to be sovereign. I say, if you want to engage God to bless your doings. Now, a whole lot of you have already given yourself over to Satan. And so this is not interesting to you. And that's why I'm a little skittish. And I'm watching for guns and needles and stuff like that. I'm going to be kind of careful about the kinds of invitations I accept, because I'm not above evil wanting to grab me and destroy me. Some lodge house of their Gadianishness. So I'm going to have to be careful about that business. Go to conferences for families. Some others too, where you're invited. You know, maybe they're just saying, well, we need a keynote speaker. We're going to get Nemro to be our keynote speaker. And he can talk about a lot of things that matter. Family matters to everybody. Plenty to talk about when it comes to the idea of marriage and family. Style or just, oh my gosh, I've never heard anybody talk in that manner. I was just listening to somebody talk about why they have become enamored of only using the King James Version of the Bible. And I really liked him because he was really just, it was obvious that he was just talking and that he had no problems with using, I don't call it folksy. Relaxed, yet less formalized speech. And that's always been something that I felt like that was that either I could do or that I felt comfortable doing or that I had a penchant for. I don't know. But I don't mind being that way. I know people go, you need to go and you need to get a little training in how to give a speech. And you're going, I really appreciate your input. Thank you. And then ignore it, you know, because it's like those things aren't useful. I'm touching more lives the way I do it. And it's mostly to say people aren't so apt to go to sleep on me because they go, he's more energetic. That was something that got said at the chief information. You know, I gave presentations on cybersecurity, which I find eminently boring and stupid. I gave out there, but they all said, we really liked you because you were just so animated and you were just so interesting and fun to watch and listen to. And you go, yes, that's what I want. That's nigh on to preaching, is doing it that way. Like I said, you know, I really appreciate general conference talks, but they're boring. And it's like, do you guys all get together and take classes on how to be just kind of vaguely boring speakers? And Latter-day Saints are just well trained to pay attention to boring speakers? Is that what we've got running here? Wow! And you go, that's okay. See, I don't have to go by the normal Latter-day Saint ways. I go out, I say that I am a male line descendant from the biblical Aaron, Moses' brother. Says, I'm an Aaronite priest. Says, so I will do something. I will give you the traditional blessing at the end. It says, it usually offends both Jew and Gentile. Christians will shake their heads and go, that's not right, that's not right. The Latter-day Saints will say, shake their head and go, that's not right, that's not right. And it's great. So I love it. I love it. I love doing something unique that is mine to do and really can't be taken away from me. That's exciting to me. That's fun. So, anyway. So I think that provides kind of the underlayment of the whys, the what fors. Lisa's the first one to say, Jason, why would we spend so much money getting you a degree to do something that you can easily do without it? And you go, because, Lisa, I think that will open doors and that will get me into places that other people just go, no, we're not going to let you in because you don't have the right kind of credentials. This gives me the credentials, and it also becomes kind of my calling card so that people know what I'm going to be up to as I come in. I will give you a blessing, and it will be efficacious. God the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will let it come and let it come into your life. You may feel something, and that's proper. That's right. That's good. I don't mind doing a little bit of Jewish, gesturing and a Jewish take on it. I very much get kind of a kick out of rabbis, although I am certainly not a rabbinic Jew. And then that was something I was just thinking about this week, because, you know, sometimes people say, well, you're Jewish. And I said, yeah, I guess. And it says, and I'm really not. It said, but does that take away from this thing? No. The Jews are, you know, what Roman Catholicism is to first century Christianity, or what Roman Catholicism is to first century Christianity, is kind of the same as what Judaism is to the kind of Yahwehism that would have been familiar to Moses and Aaron, Phineas, Eli, Elijah, stuff like that. Even Jews will say, will pin their founding on the return from the Babylonian exile is a big one. That's really where Judaism came from. Especially the rabbinical Judaism that we understand from the West, here in the West. I am not of the tribe of Judah. I've been given to, and I have most of my ties to the tribe of Ephraim. And that's, you know, and that's very much, you know, lost 10 tribes. That's us. We got carried away early on. And that's our background. Or the predominant, my predominant background, I suppose, and also my wife. But I have this really funny thing. It's like this little shock up the family background. From father to son, father to son, father to son, father to son, or actually son to father, all the way back to Aaron. We are God's priests, Jehovah's priests. I'm not going to discount anything else. I'm not going to discount the Melchizedek priesthood as manifested through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm an elder in that church. I have the Melchizedek priesthood. Now it comes to the Aaronic priesthood, I don't really know what to say. That's almost become like the junior auxiliary to the Melchizedek priesthood. When it comes to the church, and I don't really know what exactly to... Oh, I just went through Willard. Okay, I'm not as far along as I thought I was. I'm coming up to the turnoff to Estancia and Moriarty, which I'm not taking. Going on to Mountain Air, and then from Mountain Air down to Bernardo. And these are good. These are little 20, 25 mile hops now. Anyway, so. I have this other priesthood that bears little if no resemblance to the Aaronic priesthood through the church. That's why it's kind of confusing. I can do many ordinances of the gospel when authorized. What I do here as an Aaronite priest preaching about family, this I do under the power I have and the authority that I have through my fathers, through my family. It's hard to say I'm a Cohen. That's a Jewish-ish thing. It's not inappropriate. My third great grandfather was Isaacson HaKohen. Hakohen. This is so I do have some right to it, although my fathers married outside of the Jewish faith, many of them. Jewish now? No. Not in the traditional sense. And that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I'm not trying to get into the Jewish faith. I'm not trying to get the right of return to Israel. It's not all that interesting to me. I honor those who desire it. If I get invited to speak in Israel, I don't think I'll pass it up. It says, but I didn't go to Hebrew school. We knew we had a Jewish ancestry. We only lately learned about the Aaron stuff. Sunday night. Anyway. So, it's just as well. I'm grateful for what's happened to me all this time, because I was good about not going into a certain direction. I think other people had a sense for the fact that I was not as devoted to a career in technology as they would have liked. And I need a final turn just to get through my to my pension, just to retire from that, or however you want to say it. It doesn't have to be retirement. I don't care. I'll just stop doing that kind of work. I'll come back and I'll do something else instead. It's that simple. Excuse me. And I'd like to work on this other thing. Because this is, I mean, technology is interesting. But it's not important. Getting people to stick with, boy, let me tell you, there's more that needs to be said about marriage to try to get people to be married. And it's really quite disconcerting that more doesn't seem to be being done from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, particularly to do this. And I'm not saying they're not doing it. And you go, but it certainly isn't being preached very, very regularly. And so I would continue to be, as I always have been, a bit of an outlier. Regardless, it's bad to do these 3-hour monstrosity recordings, but you know, these recordings aren't really made to be listened to particularly. Not that I don't hide them particularly. You know, they're on the Gopher page, and it can be accessed through HTTP as well. It's not like it's hidden. It's not advertised. And boy, let me tell you, 1,000 people would say, that's not pretty enough for me. And you go, good. I don't want to be pretty for you. It's for me. I don't know who it's for. I don't know if it's for me. But I do it. So every time I tend to start thinking about this and talking about it, I find myself more and more saying, yeah, I'm going to do this. It's going to happen. It says, and I know some things about myself. And I said, and you know, they go, oh, that's going to be $18,000 spent for no decent purpose. And you go, well, it says, let me tell you what. When people see me coming, they will know what I'm going to do before I even do it. They'll go, oh, it's one of those gosh darn Christians. And then they're going to say, oh, well, that wasn't what I had, what I thought. That wasn't what I had in mind. Oh, my gosh, this guy is really quite different. And you go, yeah, yeah, I am. He says, and I haven't tried to build the kind of respectability, particularly, except to say, I want certain venues to know that I am a person of repute. I have done a thesis. I have done a dissertation. But I'm here to work. I'm not here to study and to tell you what I've learned. I'm here to preach to you about stuff you should already know and you should already be doing. And if you're not doing it yet, I'm going to encourage you to do it. And that might be kind of a weak effort at what I'm going to try to do, which is I'm going to warn you that if you don't do this, you're going to miss out on something that you dearly want. The more elite you are, the more interested you will be. I'm not talking about a money-making activity. I'm not peddling a get-rich-quick scheme. I'm peddling the real thing. I'm peddling Godhead. I'm getting it for myself, and I'm going to help. And I want to help you get it too. Well, I don't even know if I'm going to help you. I'm going to point you in the way that you need to go. And you're going to do it. And if it doesn't make sense to you, well, then you don't really, then I guess you're not really all that interested in this. It's very sad. Anyway, so there it is. And that gives my, and I hope that's my justification for saying, why are you taking the job at Sunspot and taking probably a reduction in pay? And you go, well, there's going to be a few things to it. One big thing is Lisa Jane and I need to start throttling back our lives. You know, we were making a lot of money, close to six figures, and we needed to start learning how to operate on less, because we were going to have significantly less. It's time to start throttling back. Now, do I really want it to do well? It says, yes, I would really like to make $70, $75, $80. It says, and that's just because I would like to build up my pension. You know, it isn't just service time, it's also the average. Right now, you know, I need to do it in so far that it's going to give me a good average. I also need a job that isn't too rough, honestly, for me at least, and gives me time to work on a doctorate. You go, a doctor of ministry? You go, yeah, yeah, doctor of ministry. I want people to know what they're going to get when I'm coming. They're going to get preached to. And I'm not coming from the academy. I'm coming from God. Thank you. So, okay. How long was this thing going? Take a look.
Wow. Two and a half hours.
That's good enough. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and cut it off. And thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.